This is the 18th broadcast in the series America Looks Abroad, presented by the officers and staff members of the Foreign Policy Association. This nonpartisan organization, open to all who are interested in American foreign policy, offers accurate information on current world events. Once again, attention is focused on Europe, where efforts are being made to end the Finnish war. Mr. William T. Stone, Vice President of the Foreign Policy Association and Director of its Washington Bureau, will discuss these developments in relation to Mr. Wells' mission in Europe. Mr. Stone.
Good afternoon. Decisive events are shaping in Europe this weekend. In the midst of Mr. Sumner Wells' fact-finding mission for President Roosevelt, strenuous efforts are being made to end the Russo-Finnish war in the north, while European statesmen are feverishly engaged in diplomatic soundings at other European capitals. Today, conversations between Russia and Finland are continuing in Moscow. The German Foreign Minister von Ribbentrop is in Rome. And this morning, Mr. Wells arrived from Paris to London to confer with Prime Minister Chamberlain and members of the British Cabinet. Here in Washington, these events are being followed with intense interest for what they may tell about the future course of Europe's two wars and the present intentions of the powers. Many perplexing questions are being asked, even by well-informed State Department officials. It is already clear that Sweden's effort to mediate between Russia and Finland is marking a turning point in the Northern War. It is also apparent that mediation between Russia and Finland is part of a larger diplomatic tug of war. But it is still not clear how mediation may affect the conflict in the West. Will Britain and France suffer a diplomatic defeat if Finland actually accepts Russia's terms? Or will this remove Soviet Russia from the war and loosen the ties between Moscow and Berlin? What is Germany's role in this northern peace effort? Has Great Britain made concessions to Italy by releasing the Italian coal ships detained earlier this week? Or is this part of a clever diplomatic bargain with Mussolini? No one in Washington can answer these questions with any certainty. Up to this point, at least, State Department officials are without complete information. Yesterday, Ambassador Steinhardt sent Secretary Hull a report on his two-hour conference with Premier Molotov in Moscow. But Mr. Wells has sent in only one or two very brief, confidential reports, which have been seen by no one except President Roosevelt and Mr. Hull. As a result, Washington is still sifting facts from rumors and reserving its final judgment. Nevertheless, experienced observers here have learned a good deal by reading between the lines of inspired newspaper reports which have been sent out from all the European capitals during the past 10 days. These public reports may or may not tally with what Mr. Wells and our other diplomats are being told in private, but they are significant just the same. For one thing, they demonstrate that the Wells journey is regarded everywhere in Europe as much more than a mere fact-finding mission. This was especially evident in Berlin last week. Three facts are worth remembering. First, the Germans gave Mr. Wells very little publicity in their own newspapers. Second, they gave foreign correspondents a great deal of background information about the German point of view, which newspaper men were allowed to cable abroad without censorship. Third, the Nazis were very polite to the president's representative and gave him unusual opportunity to see almost everybody who counts in the Nazi regime, from Hitler down. Now the information given to the foreign correspondents to cable abroad was provocative and belligerent. Germany was pictured as strong and united and determined to block the power of British plutocracy. Germany, they said, is poised for a decisive blow, which may come very soon. Germany's war aims, according to this public version, are far from moderate. The foreign correspondents were told that Germany demands security of her living space, that is, a free hand in Central and Eastern Europe. This was cleverly described to American newspaper men as a sort of German Monroe Doctrine. Under this, the Germans say they plan to build a new economic organization of Europe which will allow the smaller, dispossessed nations to trade on equal terms with the rich plutocracies. Germany demands the return of colonies and a type of freedom of the seas which would prevent the British from ever again imposing a blockade on Germany or any other country. What does this mean? On the surface, it would seem to indicate that the leaders of Germany are more intransigent than ever, that the gap between the war aims of the Allies and Germany are growing wider as the war continues, that a basis for peace in the West is very remote, whatever happens in the Baltic. All this may be true, but trained observers know that surface impressions are sometimes misleading, particularly in diplomacy. Sometimes they're deliberately misleading. So after Sumner Wells left Berlin last Sunday, some Washington officials asked why the public statements had been so uncompromising and the private conversations apparently so cordial. Could this mean that perhaps Germans were not so enthusiastic about continuing the war after all? They recalled that the British and French press had been saying Germany was about to launch a peace offensive and would give Mr. Wells a very tempting plan to take to London and Paris. The terms of such a plan were actually published in London, given out by the British Foreign Office the day before Mr. Wells arrived in Berlin. They were said to have come through the German legation in Dublin and to have been shown to Lord Halifax, the British Foreign Minister, by the Marquess of Tavistock, a gentleman who was associated with several groups which are working for peace in England. This was enough to explain the indignation of the German press. But could it not also explain the unusual attention shown to Mr. Wells during his stay in Berlin? Every door was open to Mr. Wells. In addition to seeing Hitler, the American Undersecretary of State was able to meet and talk for hours with Field Marshal Goering, Rudolf Hess, the executive head of the Nazi Party, Hans Dieckhoff, the German ambassador to Washington, who was recalled in November 1938 after Hugh Wilson, our own ambassador, was withdrawn from Berlin. In 3 days, Mr. Wells actually saw more top men in Berlin than any foreign statesman in many months. Obviously, this was the real key to the importance which the Germans attached to the visit. Whatever Mr. Wells was told in private, no one doubts that the gap between Germany and the Allies is still very wide indeed. How wide was made clear enough to Mr. Wells in Paris, where the French press is saying again and again that France will not accept a premature peace or any compromise settlement which leaves the Nazis in power in Germany. Presumably, Mr. Wells will hear the same story in London. Any settlement at this time, according to the Allies, means peace on Hitler's terms. This can only consolidate the gains which the Nazis have won by force and leave Germany in a position to carve out her living space in Central and Eastern Europe. But if both sides say they're determined to fight to the finish, the issue may turn in part on the outcome of the diplomatic struggle which is coming to a head this weekend. One sector of this struggle is the dispute between Great Britain and Italy over the seizure of Italian coal ships. The other is the impending showdown in Finland. The coal dispute involves not only a test of Britain's efforts to embargo all exports from Germany, but also a test of Italy's future intentions. Early in the war, Great Britain sent a purchasing commission to Rome in an effort to reach a new trade agreement with Italy. The British were anxious to buy important war materials from the Italians in return for British coal. The negotiations dragged on for nearly 4 months, but finally, about February 15th, were broken off by the Italians, apparently as a result of a strong German pressure on Mussolini. Shortly afterwards, the British announced that after March 1st, Italy could no longer import German coal by way of Rotterdam. This was a serious blow to Italy, for up until that time, the British had allowed Italian coal ships to pass through its control ports, despite the British order in Council of November 27th, which placed an embargo on all German exports. Moreover, Italy is entirely dependent upon coal from abroad, much of which has been brought in by the sea. On March 3rd, then, the Italian government protested vigorously against the new British regulations. And Britain replied by stopping 13 Italian coal ships which had sailed from Rotterdam after March 1st. By the middle of last week, the crisis had become acute. The Italian press took on an angry tone, and the fascist government came out in the open with a challenge which involved its own prestige. Still, the British refused to give ground, and they let it be known that British troops had concentrated in Kenya Colony, near the border of Ethiopia. The question was not merely where Italy would buy her coal, but the much broader question of whether Mussolini would bow to Britain or turn towards Germany. If Mussolini were to line up with Germany, he would face the threat of being cut off from both ends of the Mediterranean by the British fleet. But he would also be able to threaten the Allied lines of communication to the Near East. Yesterday, the British released the Italian ships at just about the time that Hitler ordered von Ribbentrop to hurry to Rome. Washington doubts whether Mussolini is really ready to climb down from his neutral fence, and they believe some compromise agreement may already be in the making. If this is true, the British will have increased the difficulties of Hitler's foreign minister in Rome. But the tug of war is not yet over. The relation between the Finnish war and the major conflict in Europe is no less vital. The negotiations begun in Sweden have now extended to Moscow and other capitals, which also have a direct concern in the outcome. To Sweden, continuation of the Northern War spells almost inevitable involvement. If she allows Britain and France to send troops across her territory, she faces attack not only from Russia, but also from Germany. It's not hard to see why the Swedish government is trying to call a halt to the fighting on the Karelian Isthmus. To Finland, the choice is even more desperate. She faces almost certain destruction if she tries to resist Russia alone. And unless Britain and France are actually ready to send large armies, Finland is in danger of being overrun before effective aid arrives. The Allies now say they are ready to intensify their help to the Finns, provided the Scandinavian countries will cooperate by permitting the passage of Allied troops across Norway and Sweden. But London still hesitates to declare war on Russia. A peace settlement between Russia and Finland might deprive the Allies of their last opportunity to create a northern front, cutting Germany off from the important supply of Swedish iron ore and tightening the blockade. But if the threat of an Allied attack on Russia were removed, it might perhaps lead to a loosening of the ties between the Soviet Union and Germany. Naturally, Germany would like to see the end of the Finnish War, not only because it would reduce the danger of a new northern front, but also because she hopes it will permit Russia to furnish larger supplies of foodstuffs and war materials to Germany. This explains the intense diplomatic activity in Berlin this weekend, and the cautious undercover effort of Germany to moderate Russia's peace terms. But Germany may now see an even larger opportunity to link a Finnish truce with negotiations for a settlement in the West. The fact that Ribbentrop is to have an audience with the Pope is most significant. It may mean that Hitler is trying to find a new peace formula on the basis of a united front against communism. This, however, is mere speculation, and Washington sees rather large obstacles in the way of such an agreement at this time. The chief obstacle, of course, is that a deal of this kind would bring peace on Hitler's terms, and this the Allies still seem determined to resist. But all the factors are not known as yet, and it would be a mistake, I think, to rule out the possibility of mediation.
Thank you, Mr. Stone. Last week, the Association announced that you'd answer questions sent in by the radio audience. A number of questions have been sent in. Perhaps you have time to answer at least one. Here is one asked by several listeners. What was the real reason for sending Sumner Wells to Europe at this time?
Well, there were several reasons. One was the reason publicly given, that President Roosevelt wanted to learn off the record all that he could about the aims of the warring powers before the war spreads or intensifies. But another factor in the decision to send Mr. Wells abroad was the growing feeling among some people in Washington that the last chance for a negotiated settlement in Europe would disappear if the war spreads to other fronts this spring. This view was not shared by all of the president's advisors on foreign policy. In fact, there are two distinct schools of thought in Washington at the present time. But the significant point is that the group in favor of seeking an early peace has gained in strength during the past few months, and President Roosevelt was at least willing to let Mr. Wells explore the possibilities.
Mr. William T. Stone, Vice President of the Foreign Policy Association and Director of its Washington Bureau, was today's speaker in the America Looks Abroad series. Your questions concerning the facts behind the headlines will be answered in forthcoming broadcasts. Also, you may have a free copy of the weekly bulletin written by the people you hear on this program and containing an article by Mr. Stone. Address your question or request for a bulletin to the Foreign Policy Association, 8 West 40th Street, New York. Tune in next Sunday to hear another speaker in the America Looks Abroad series. This is the National Broadcasting Company.